Welcome to the CME-IBD podcast series, Enteral Nutrition as Primary Therapy for Crohn's Disease, Making It Happen for Pediatric Patients. This topic is covered over 5 podcast episodes. This first episode focuses on when to offer enteral nutrition in treating pediatric Crohn's patients. Our series is sponsored by the NASPGHAN Foundation for Children's Digestive Health and Nutrition, along with the North American Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition. A special thank you to Abbott Nutrition for providing support for this program. I'm Dr. Tony Otley, moderator and chair of the program, and professor of pediatrics at the IWK Health Center in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. Our faculty today is Dr. Robert Balbisano, professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine and director of the Center for Pediatric Inflammatory Bowel Disease at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. The focus of today's podcast is really to talk about the practicalities and tips for successfully offering enteral nutrition as a therapy for inducing remission in Crohn's disease. And what we thought we would do is walk through the process from when the decision is made to start someone in enteral nutrition, identify hurdles or barriers that are perceived with offering this therapy, and that we're going to go to the people that know best, people that have used this therapy frequently, to get their answers about as to these hurdles to figure out the best way moving forward to offer this therapy for your patients. I guess to start with, what is enteral nutrition? And I think we use this term to mean different things. Often people talk about EEN or exclusive enteral nutrition. And when I use that term, I'm thinking of enteral nutrition as the sole source of nutrition for that patient for the period of time that we're treating them for their induction of remission. They can drink clear fluids on top of that, but EEN would be most of their nutrition coming from the formula, as opposed to some centers, and we'll hear from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia group. Their approach to enteral nutrition is a little modified, where there can be some supplemental oral intake. And Sarah Weston, the nutritionist from CHOP, will talk about that. What we're not going to talk about today is the science behind enteral nutrition as a therapy for Crohn's disease. There certainly is an increasing research base of basic science studies and clinical trials that support the efficacy of this therapy to induce and even to maintain remission of Crohn's disease. NASPGHAN came out with a clinical practice guideline within the last year and a bit, and I would refer you to that for more information about the science behind enteral nutrition. So let's begin with a newly diagnosed young teen with Crohn's disease. And as the physician, I'm sitting down to discuss treatment options. For someone to choose enteral nutrition as a treatment option, first, it has to be offered as an option. And from our survey of NASPGHAN members, it seemed clear that many pediatric GIs aren't offering enteral nutrition as primary therapy for induction of remission. And I think there's probably many reasons behind that. One thing that we seem to identify was if you didn't train in the center, if you didn't have experience using this therapy, it made sense that you weren't comfortable or wouldn't be offering this therapy. Bob, how do you approach this scenario? What do you routinely offer this to your newly diagnosed Crohn's patients?
So I would say it's quite standard here at CHOP that when a child is diagnosed, unless if there's some type of surgical abdomen, you know, some acuity that requires surgery immediately, or if a child's having a lot of vomiting, outside of those cases, I would say to almost 100% that when we talk about treatment options, that the enteral nutrition option is always part of our discussion.
And do you get the sense that that your colleagues are doing a similar sort of approach?
So within our institution, unfortunately, there is probably some variation in that approach. But the physicians that see the majority of the inflammatory bowel disease patients, I would assume and expect that they have the same approach, that all newly diagnosed and even people failing traditional therapies, that enteral nutrition is discussed during the visit.
Yeah, the thing that always I find very interesting is the variation in this practice globally. You go to the United Kingdom, England, and what I understand is it's really not an option. If you're a newly diagnosed pediatric patient with Crohn's disease, the treatment is enteral nutrition, and it's usually orally given. If you don't tolerate that, then it's given by a nasogastric tube. And it's only if you don't, if that doesn't work for you, if you fail that therapy, that steroids are then offered. And then we come to North America, and it's such a different approach where often it isn't even offered up as a potential option.
Actually, I think most likely, at least in the United States, it's probably uncommon that a patient is given that option. And I say that with, I see a large number of second opinions, and the majority of the second opinions that I see have never even heard of enteral nutrition as an option for their therapy.
And you said that, if they're vomiting, so if they've got obvious reasons why they may not tolerate a nutritional therapy or may have issues with that, are there other patients that you wouldn't offer if they had quite severe disease, or does disease location factor in patients who would offer it or not to?
Well, I think both of those are issues that come up in discussion. Clearly, if a patient is too ill to tolerate this particular therapy, then I would avoid it. Some patients do need immediate rescue therapy and require hospitalization, and we may do enteral nutrition, but we probably would do it with a combination of another therapy. There is that type of patient that we might hold off on enteral nutrition immediately because of the severity of their disease.
Right. I know for the longest time the concern about colonic Crohn's disease and some of the earlier studies had suggested that they may not respond as well, and then it almost became a self-fulfilling prophecy and further trials sort of excluded those patients. I know in practice we haven't precluded those patients from being offered enteral nutrition, and we've had good response, and there's studies out of Scotland in the last few years which would also suggest that chronic Crohn's disease can respond to enteral nutrition.
Right, and we have the same experience here in the paper that we publish also. The majority of our patients had ileal pancolonic disease, which again is a pretty common Crohn's disease presentation in pediatrics. And so I agree with you. I think that unfortunately there was sort of that belief that colonic disease did not work, and so nobody would use it in that way. But hopefully the trend is changing.
Right. So moving on, certainly before I present therapy options to a family, I'll often want to make it clear that I want them to take time to hear the options. I think one of the knee-jerk responses, particularly if we're talking about, exclusive enteral nutrition given by a tube, the knee-jerk response is, are you crazy? And yet when they hear the steroid and the potential side effects, it's hard. They're caught between a rock and a hard place in that they don't see an easy or clear option. But I do say not to make that decision immediately. I often say you need to go home, discuss it with the family, think about it, and we offer them some other resources. Once I've presented options to family, we get the dietitian to go in and discuss nutrition and IBD, and not just focusing on enteral nutrition therapy, but also if they were to choose steroid, issues around nutrition, vitamin D, and calcium is part of that discussion as well.
Can I just bring up one thing? So I'm just concerned that people listening might think, especially people in the United States might think, oh, well, they could do it at CHOP because they have all these resources. I can never do it at my place. I mean, I don't want this process to sound complicated. I would say just sort of in summary, I do think this could be done at any institution once the family has decided on enteral approach, that you need to get their nutritionist involved and also their social worker involved. And really, the nutritionist and the social worker really at any center can accomplish what we're accomplishing at CHOP. Now, the actual placement of the NG tube or the feeding tube, I guess that would have to be, independent. Each center has to sort of come up with how do they solve that problem in trying to get this not to be such a big issue, because as has already been repeated, is if that first tube goes in and is a problem, unfortunately, I think that's a very hard hurdle to overcome. And so that first time it's done has to be done by the right person. And I think centers maybe have to work on trying to get the right person to teach how to put the tube in. But all the other things, social work, nutrition, all centers have those people, and we just need to incorporate them, you know, into this process. So it's not that complicated.
Right. And Bob, I think we talked previously, you do an order, you've got a sort of a pre-printed sheet that you do that has some of the key points, and that's something that we could make available as a link related to where the podcast site.
Right, and so this order goes to the home care company, and then they just do that. So that, I think that does make it easier for me because it's sort of a thoughtless process, and so I'm good at thoughtless processes.
Thanks for listening to this episode in the CME IBD podcast series. Please go to pedibd.org to access future episodes. I'm Tony Otley.